fun and feeling groovy.
Oh, good morning, Reading. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on a kind of a misty Saturday morning. It's interesting out. I'm Dr. Trudy Pratt, and, you know, we're going to have a fun show today. In the studio today, we have James Rickert from Prather Ranch Beef up in Shasta and Siskiyou County, kind of here and there, a little bit everywhere, fifth generation egg. Welcome, James.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, gosh, and then we also have our sometimes co-host, Mark Beecham, from Record Searchlight fame. And welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Judy.
Well, you know, we spent some time with you yesterday, James. We met you at a coffee shop for a little while, and then we ended up out at your ranch looking around, getting a tour, and we were out in Bella Vista, just 7 miles from town, but it seemed like many, many, many miles, and we got to tour your old ranch house, and then we got to see fresh calves that are, you know, kind of brand new, and then we got to go way to the back of the land, over 5,000 acres, and see a beautiful swimming hole. And so that was really fun. And part of your Prather Ranch family, you've taken over the part. You're very involved with the beef production, etc., but you also have kind of an offshoot where you're working with strawberries. So why don't we start there? Does that sound good?
Certainly.
Okay.
Start there. That's fine. Yeah, I've growing up in Northern California, looking around at the strawberry nursery business, just seeing it from the roads and knowing the people in the industry. Just when I went to college, I always thought, gosh, what about growing organic strawberry plants? And just connected down in San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly, with some organic strawberry growers and got to talking to them and find out where they get their plants from, and oftentimes it was just right down the street from where I grew up. And so my wheel started turning and thought, you know, there's no organic strawberry plants in the marketplace now. This is a good challenge for me.
Now, Shasta County has a history of being a strawberry producer, right?
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Yes. Yeah, actually the whole strawberry nursery business is truly based in Shasta County in a worldwide level.
Do most people know that?
Not many people at all.
Wow.
And the big nursery up here is Lassen Canyon Nursery, and they are the biggest, and I can maybe say, you know, one of the best nurseries up here. They do a great job, but they ship product worldwide. They are a very large producer, and at certain times of the year, a very large employer here in Shasta County. But it's amazing when I spend time out in that office there, I'm hearing about shipments going to China, or, you know, they're shipping stuff to China or to Mexico or to Morocco or Spain, you name it, they've sold plants there.
And
oh,
just
my.
to be clear, these are the nursery plants, which over a period of, after they're planted over 4 months or something, turn into the plants that actually bear the fruit.
Correct.
Okay.
And then where is it that you, when you do your strawberry plant growing, your seedlings, where are you? You're up in Fall River for that, right?
We grow those up in McDowell
in
Siskiyou County.
Okay.
So we're about 10 miles from the Oregon border up there in northern Siskiyou County. Yeah, and that's actually Butte Valley. It is the best place, the best climate to grow strawberry nursery plants, from my understanding, worldwide.
Okay, and you were telling us how kind of you figured out how to use weather to your advantage. Why don't you take the listeners through that? That was interesting.
Yeah, the strawberry nursery business, well, let me back up to early 1900s. If you drive north on I-5, you'll go by a Sweetbriar exit, and that actually is kind of the basis of the strawberry industry, essentially.
Wow.
There was an old abandoned homestead there. And there was a fellow that got some strawberry plants, the runner plants, and ended up taking those down to Watsonville. And those plants just performed beautifully. And that, of course, they thought, wow, we're onto something here. And so they kind of selected one of those plants, and it was the basis of the Driscoll varieties. And so it truly, then they started figuring out growing plants in cold climates, and then harvesting them in the fall, shipping them down to coastal climates. The plants think it's springtime in November when they're freshly planted down there. And so that would mean they think it's spring in November, they start to grow, that's when they start to bear fruit early, and we as consumers get to get strawberries very early in the supermarket.
Yeah.
So prior to these berries, these plants being discovered, if you will, in Sweetbriar and then shipped to Watsonville, Were strawberries available commercially in the United States? No.
Not to my knowledge, no. I've done a little research on this, and I did hear that there were some growers in the upper Midwest that were, as soon as they got the rail system set up, they were shipping strawberries to, you know, the New York area and the Northeast, and put in boxcars. But you've got to think, you really didn't have a good transportation system. Right. The infrastructure wasn't there. Cold storage didn't exactly exist back then, and so these technologies weren't available, and you could only have strawberries if you grew them in your backyard.
Okay, fascinating. Well, this is radio, and we have to take a little radio break. You're listening to Positively Healthy, and we're going to be back with more of James Rickert right after this.
Forever.
Oh, aren't we clever? This is Positively Healthy, and you're listening to Dr. Trudy Pratt. And our guest in the studio is James Rickert from Prairie View Ranch, Shasta and Siskiyou County. And we're talking strawberries. So most people associate your family name with beef, and we know that it's sold out at Kent's Market. And I'm not certain how long have you guys been selling beef out there?
Oh, gosh. I would say, I'd have to ask Kent, but it's been quite some time.
Okay.
It's been a long time.
We think of you as an institution out there, and we hope you stay there, and that's sort of our local association with your family.
Excellent.
And then also, we know that you're at the Mount Shasta supermarket up there, so we know there are two places we can get your beef. And so, but coming back to strawberries, so, you know, this is a new thing for most of us to learn that Shasta County is such a big strawberry producer, and that this is now something that, you know, you were saying that you went to Cal Poly and you got it. What was your degree in?
It was a crop science degree and plant protection science.
Okay, so you're using your training, and you've developed a way to have organic strawberries, and so tell us a little more about what it is that you do.
As far as with the strawberry end of things, as I said earlier, I saw the need that there really was no organic strawberry plants in the marketplace.
Okay.
And all the organic strawberry growers truly wanted this. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them. And there were also some, through the USDA, they had changed some rules to where if you're an organic grower, you must plant organic seeds or organic planting stock if it's commercially available. And since no one else was doing this, I thought, hey, people follow the rules. I should essentially have a monopoly on this if I can figure this out. And so, hey, I pursued it. And the first year was not exactly a success.
Okay.
trial and error is a great way to learn things. Learn by doing. But the first year was not a success. We had to disc in our plants because we had a disease in there. But went back to the drawing board, scratched my head a lot, and developed a different scenario, different plan, and pursued that and produced some beautiful plants. And
wow.
Yeah, really grown some tremendous plants. We've, you know, with organic, people are a little cautious. The big commercial growers are cautious in using these organic plants because if I had a disease, for example, harvested my field, shipped it to them, they've just introduced the disease that I had in my field, in the nursery field, in all their fruiting fields.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're an organic grower, which they would be because they're buying my stuff, they don't have many tools in their toolbox to take care of that disease if it's introduced.
I see.
So we really are very careful with how we grow it, and we sample routinely out there looking for any issues. We also have Siskiyou County come and go to the field, and they do a lot of inspections, thoroughly inspect the field before we can harvest. And then at harvest time, we'll harvest, ship the plants down here to Redding, I use Lassen Canyon Nursery's trim facility. And then at that point, I'll have Shasta County inspectors come and take a crack at me as well. And so they'll come look at all my plants on the trim tables and get a knife out and cut open the crowns and inspect them for any sort of any issues. And then from there, once Siskiyou County says I'm clean, Shasta County says I'm clean, I could go ahead and proceed to sell anywhere in the world.
Now, when we think of organic, we think of less is more. You know, we think of going back in time to how agriculture was done. Is that part of what you were doing to fine-tune the process, or were you using technology? Or
I definitely think with organic, you really have to look back 50, 60, 70 years in the history books and look at what people were doing then. right before the chemical fertilizers really hit the marketplace. And you got to think, agriculture's evolved organically up until just recently. I mean, this last 100 years has been a big change in agriculture. And so you just got to look back at those earlier technologies and what people were doing, and really, they had a lot of things figured out pretty well. So look at what they're doing and try to mimic that, but with modern day technology.
Now, you received an award recently, so tell us about your award.
Yes, it was with the California Department of Pesticide Regulation. A lot of people don't like them, but a lot of farmers are not fans of the pesticide regulation people. But for the most part, we Prather Ranch and our nursery, we won an award for, it was called an IPM Innovator Award. So since we essentially solved a problem in growing strawberry plants without the use of methyl bromide, they wanted to highlight that and give us an award for that. So that was really neat.
Now, was that a monetary award? Did you get a trophy?
I wish. No, I got to take some time off of work, drive to Sacramento, go to an award ceremony, shake Marianne Warmerdam's hand. She's the head of the Department of Pesticide Regulation. Shake Marianne's hand, and then drive on home and get back to work.
Get back to work.
I had a question going back to Lassen Canyon Nursery. Could you paint a sort of a picture of what it's like during harvest time at Lassen Canyon, because there are 1,500 employees or something?
It's amazing. At times when all of their trim sheds are going and they're getting trucks filled with plants coming in, you've got people in all different directions, plants everywhere, workers coming and going. It is absolute pandemonium. But it's just amazing to see the amount of product being produced here locally and then just shipped out, and there's constantly trucks, fully loaded refrigerated trucks filled with strawberry nursery plants going all over the place. And it's really neat to watch. It's fun to be a part of.
And tens of millions of plants. I don't think really understand the volumes we're talking about here. Even your operation is, small compared to the industry as a whole, and yet you produce how many plants in a year?
On 8 acres, we can grow 2 million plants. And so selling 2 million plants is in boxes of 1,000 typically, it's a challenge. A lot of work.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're going to take a break here, and you're listening to KCNR 1460, and this is Positively Healthy, and we'll be back with more of James Rickert right after this.
It is sunflower seed. Drinking lots of everything. Soaking up a week.
Okay. This is Positively Healthy, and you're listening to Dr. Trudy Pratt, and our guest in the studio is James Rickert of Prather Ranch. And Prather Ranch beef is quite famous to many of us, and they're from Shasta County and Siskiyou County, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, during the break, I was learning just how much more in our community you really are, and Rickerts that I know you are related to, which I had not put together yet. So tell us, you were saying you're five generations, and where do you branch?
Yeah, we've got a lot of Rickerts spread all over Northern California, good or bad.
That's how we are.
Listeners, you may have a Rickert as a neighbor.
I'm going to interrupt. I was saying during the break, we were talking about the Rickert Meat Company in Cottonwood, and when I was a kid, my dad and I used to go down there every week and buy a whole bunch of beef.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. See, even our producer Jim has a connection with you.
Yeah, that would have been my grandfather Jim and mm-hmm. his two brothers, Duke and Bud. Mm-hmm. And so there were three brothers, essentially, that ran that operation.
I remember them well.
Yeah. Oh, they're... And then I worked there. I was really young, and I think I cleaned pork bellies there a few times, but I didn't spend too much time on that with that slaughter facility. I spent a lot more time at the Prather Ranch facility up in Siskiyou County.
Yeah, okay. And so tell us then, you were saying that you have some ranches around here where you guys
I'll talk about where the beef's raised here in Shasta County. We've got, essentially there's three different locations where Prather Ranch beef, in Lower Shasta County, I should say, there's three locations. There's one at out Gas Point Road in Cottonwood, a place called the Divine Ranch. Fellow Kevin Divine's got some of our cattle out there, and he helps us out. Good guy. And then there is the Fenwood Ranch, which actually my parents and our family owns. Not Prather Ranch, but the Rickert know, the Rickards. And that's the Fenwood Place out on Dersh Road and Millville Plains and Parkville Roads. Mm-hmm. And it's protected by a conservation easement that's held by the Shasta Land Trust. And so that's a beautiful property there. It's got 2.5 miles of river frontage, so our cattle have some amazing views as they are enjoying lower Shasta County.
Yeah.
And then the third property is where I live, which is the Bella Vista Ranch, just out Highway 299 East on the east side of the River Hills subdivision, just right off 299. Got a lot of frontage out there along the highway, and that's where you guys were yesterday. And
it was unbelievable.
The grass is green right now.
It certainly is. And then as we move into the eastern part of Shasta County, what do you have?
Yes, up in Fall River Valley, we've got quite a few properties, and a lot of smaller properties that we've assembled to make some larger units, essentially.
And that's mostly where you were raised,
yeah,
right?
I grew up in Fall River up there, correct.
Okay. And then when we look more at McDowell, what do you have there?
Well, yeah, McDowell, we've got the Hay Ranch, which is on the east side of McDowell, the town of McDowell, where we grow a lot of alfalfa hay and some grain. And then we actually lease some land to some of the strawberry nurseries up there. And then our headquarters ranch is on the west side of Highway 97 in Butte Valley, and that is where our slaughter facility is. That's where the main beef production area is. Then if you want to cross the hills into the Shasta Valley, we operate a ranch for the Nature's Conservancy there called Shasta Big Springs. And that's a very large operation that's got some of the headwaters of the Shasta River, and it's right at the base of Mount Shasta. Pretty beautiful.
These are some of the luckiest cows.
Oh, yeah. If reincarnation did exist and I ever came back, I think I would be pretty dang happy if I could be a Prather Ranch cow.
At least the first 2 years.
Yeah, well, I'd actually want to be a cow, so I'd be around. We've got, you know, some of our older cows are, you know, thinking back to some ear tags. We got some, I think, 92, 93 models out there.
Okay.
So, yeah, we keep them around for a while. As long as they're producing calves, we keep them part of the family.
Excellent. So when we think of Prather Ranch, most of our brains go to McDowell. And mm-hmm. we think, okay, you guys are up there in Siskiyou County. And you were telling me yesterday that Prather Ranch was kind of almost a little community mm-hmm. at one time, historically.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, it was actually late 1800s. If you were to go from Wairika to Klamath Falls, you would have to go over Ball Mountain. And the first thing you would come to when you hit Butte Valley would be the community of Prather Ranch. And there was a post office there. There was a lumber mill. There was a hotel, a creamery. They had a couple hundred people living what's just the ranch today. And now we have it. It's scaled back to probably 4 families live there full time. We've got a few cabins, the processing facility, some barns, and a hydroelectric plant. And that's all that's left now. And some old buildings that were part of the old community are still intact.
So the name Prather Ranch Beef comes from the fact that is the old ranch, Prather Ranch.
Yes.
There are no Prathers that are in your family.
Not at all.
Or running this ranch.
Yeah, there's
okay.
a lot
just
of...
I want to clarify that for the folks.
Absolutely. There's a lot of schools of thought when you're in managing a property or you buy a property. You could wipe out the historic name and put your last name up there, so we could have called it the Rickert Ranch or something, but that's not the case. We're going to honor the history of the early settlers there, and we're going to maintain that Prather Ranch name in perpetuity, because we're really just temporary stewards.
I love it.
Could you talk about your family's longtime partner in the business, the supermarket magnate from
yes.
down in Southern California?
Yes, his name was Walter Ralphs, and he just recently passed away. As I said to you guys yesterday, I've known Walt ever since I've known my parents, so kind of a long time. He's always been part of my family, and he's my our family's business partner in Prather Ranch. And now with Walt's passing, that's of course the ownership's changed a bit, but day-to-day operations, of course, will be the same.
And his family founded the Ralph's supermarket chain
yes.
back in the day.
It would have been his grandfather that started it. He just started out as a small mercantile store and then branched out and some ambition in the Ralph's family, and they eventually, as Los Angeles grew, so did the Ralph's supermarkets chain. And Walt has been credited in changing the way supermarkets essentially operated. Instead of walking in, talking to a clerk and pointing at things behind the counter saying, I want 2 of these, 3 of those, Walt's idea was, why not give the consumer the ultimate control? Why not trust them and let them pick for themselves? And when they're leaving the store, they could pay for it on the way out.
Hmm.
And so that's really, he was credited with changing the way supermarkets operated, and which that's how they are operated today.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to go to a break here. You're listening to Positively Healthy. Our guest is James Rickert from Pray the Ranch, and we'll be back for more of this. Don't go away. Okay, welcome back. Well, in the studio we have James Rickert from Pray the Ranch, and if you're just tuning in, this is the fabulous meat you see out at Kent's Meats, and it's the only place you can get it around here. So if you haven't tried it before, you're gonna wanna scurry on down. And you know, James, welcome back. I wanna talk about this idea of a closed herd. That's one of the things your ranch is famous for.
Yes. Yeah, we if you look back at what closed herd means, it means we're not going down to the auction yard in Cottonwood and buying a bunch of cattle and bringing them onto our ranches, raising them and processing them and selling the meat. We have our own mother cows, and the only way for us to grow our herd is to have more calves and save the female calves for breeding stock, essentially. And so that's the only way we can grow our herd. And so it's a challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
And there are many reasons why we did this, but we really did it for pharmaceutical purposes.
Okay.
And that's one thing Pray the Ranch has been known for over the years, as well as being a supplier of bovine-sourced pharmaceutical materials. And what does that mean? We sell beef parts to people, to pharmaceutical companies, and those are used in the medical industry.
How?
Well, we've done a lot of different products. Starting out, I will talk about the collagen. We used to sell, and I say used to because that contract has expired, but we would sell a lot of these cattle hides, ship them down to a company in Fremont called the Collagen Corporation, and they would extract the collagen material from these cattle hides. And they could, at one point, they were able to extract over $1 million worth of bovine collagen from one cattle hide.
Oh, my goodness.
I wish we saw some of that money.
Yeah, holy cow.
But we had a very unique system, and when these collagen people first needed a beef supplier, that actually went on to an ex-Redding resident. His name was Terry Knapp, and he knew my parents somehow, and just got in communication with them and said, hey, I'm looking for a very isolated herd that hasn't been commingling with other herds. He had all these very strict requirements of what he needed with this beef cattle herd, and just so happened that we fit it perfectly. We hadn't been buying any cattle. In fact, at that point, my dad was slowly selling off more of our animals at Pray the Ranch to try to get more into hay and forage production and out of the beef production side, because there wasn't a lot of money in that side of the business. So he was scaling that down at this point, and then all of a sudden we need to ramp back up again, but without buying any additional cattle. And so that was a challenge, but we've been, ever since that point, slowly increasing our herd, but still, of course, still producing beef products.
What exactly is collagen used for again, or was it used for?
It was initially used in a lot of cosmetics for people with the puffy lips. When you looked at Julia Roberts, 10 years ago, she had a little bit of Pray the Ranch in her lips. So that was kind of funny to see all the actresses with the very large lips, and that's most of it was coming from bovine collagen.
Could you see the brand on her lips?
No, but not at all. Okay. Yeah, didn't know what ID number that one was.
Now, there are also kind of true medical reasons that people have needed your
We sell a lot of different products. We've done blood to a lot of, research and development. We will, at certain times, process calves, which I really hate working in the facility when we do that because, they're calves. We have to do it under a year old, but we extract their pituitary glands, and that's actually used to develop a artificial skin for burn victims.
Wow.
And we've had people in the medical industry say, your product has saved many lives, because people that have third-degree burns all over their body, how do you handle that? But they've been able to get this artificial skin and basically encapsulate these people and Basically save their life.
So what does that mean? Like, what is how do you grow skin?
That's a great question, and I don't know how that is done. But okay. From my understanding, it requires a blender, a pituitary gland, and a bunch of other materials. And,
okay.
and that's about all I know. But yeah, it's a pretty neat thing. And then in addition to that, we sell bones to a company in Florida. And they manufacture bone screws out of those bones.
Oh, wow.
Instead of getting a stainless steel pin in your shoulder or your arm, you can get a Prather-Ranch bovine screw put in you.
Huh.
And that you won't set off metal detectors, and you won't feel those storms coming in. And, it's a pretty neat product.
That's great.
So in a very real sense, neat was kind of a byproduct of other sales that you were making, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and... But, and I go, collagen is that contract has expired, but also coming on the heels of that, early in this, early in the century, was mad cow disease and some other scares, which would steer health-conscious consumers toward your herd, toward your product, because you don't have, because the nature of it, it's not susceptible to the same problems that a big industrial herd might be susceptible to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When mad cow disease was found in the United States, I heard it on the radio. I pulled over off the side of the road. I called my folks and said, your phone's going to go off the hook. And sure enough, 2 days later, they were on the cover of the Sacramento Bee.
Wow.
And it just, all of a sudden, people thought, the beef, all the beef in the United States isn't safe, and where can we get good, safe beef? And there were so many hits on our website that it shut down. I mean, we...
Was that 2003?
Yeah, I think it was late December 2003.
Okay.
It was a profound moment with Prather-Ranch, and ever since that point, we've essentially been sold out.
And what does sold out mean?
Well, we process weekly, and we have, let's just say we process 20 to 25 animals a week. All the beef that we process has a home. And if
it's accounted for.
It's accounted for. And if we could do 30 a week, it would all be accounted for. It's the nature of our business, though. With the closed herd, we only have what we have. And we can't go out to the auction yard and, get a bunch of animals and throw them on a ranch and put our brand on them. It doesn't work that way.
Now, where all do you sell your meat? I know that, I mentioned earlier the two places in Shasta and Siskiyou County, the Mount Shasta Supermarket and then Kent's Meats here.
We sell most of our meat down in Sacramento in the Bay Areas. We sell to, in the Sacramento Natural Food Co-op. It's a big co-op down there. In San Francisco, we have our main store is at the Ferry Plaza Marketplace, which is essentially a big covered farmer's market.
That is so fancy.
It is the premier spot to get nice food in California. It's on par with like the Borough Market of London. I mean, it is the premier market of California, and we have a stall there, and we're actually expanding and across the way, and we're gonna have a deli counter, and we do hot dogs, all organic hot dogs. We have a grill outside that we do all organic hamburgers, and we get bread from Acme Bread Company, and cheese, local organic cheese, and so we sell really really high end burgers right on the sidewalk there. And when the Giants are playing, we got a lot of foot traffic. That's
good.
The line can get enormous.
Oh my gosh!
But it's been a lot of it's been a really good place for us to be, and then a lot of restaurants and farmers markets as well in the Bay Area.
Okay, when we come back, we'll talk about local places, local restaurants that use your beef. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy, and don't go away. We'll be right back.
Kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Oh, welcome back. You're listening to Positively Healthy here, KCNR 1460. In the studio, we have James Rickert from Prather-Ranch. And welcome back.
Thank you.
And we have Mark Beecham from Market Searchlight, contributing writer. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, okay, so we're talking about places you can get Prather-Ranch beef in restaurants in Reading. And, I have this secret push where I'm trying to get local supply of meat, vegetables, anything into our restaurants so that people can start eating them and supporting our local everybody, So I'm kind of on this little mission here. And so you said we have two places then in Reading where we can get your beef. Where are they?
Yes, Moonstone Bistro. We've been selling there for quite some time. They do a great product, and they're a very good place to eat. And it's out on they're off Placer,
okay,
in the Holiday Shopping Center, right next to Starbucks there. And then in addition to that, we sell at the Woodside Grill in Anderson at the Gaia Hotel.
Okay, and then you were also mentioning that that's basically it, that's all you can come up. I mean, you don't have any more product, so it's not like you can. If five restaurants were to call you today, you can't supply them. You don't have any more beef. You're sold out.
Exactly.
Okay, so then that just sort of leaves more room for other local ranchers to
absolutely
fill in. And
there's plenty of market out there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then other restaurants that carry your beef.
We sell to quite a bit in San Francisco.
Okay.
And, gosh, I mean, I didn't bring the list in with me, and I haven't been to most of them because I'm not down there as much as I'd like to be. I got to work. But three off the top of my head, which are fantastic places, the Slanted Door, the Slow Club, and Encanto Restaurant. And those are three just offhand that I've enjoyed, and they're really good places.
And tell
to
us
go
about, like, I've never heard of any of them, so tell me what they're like.
Oh gosh,
and where are they?
One, I'll talk about Encanto briefly, and the chef there is Chris Cosentino. And a few years ago, we actually had a big food and wine magazine shoot up at Prather Ranch headquarters. And we had Chris Cosentino, who was on the Iron Chef, as one of the chefs. We came up, and we basically had the article was the Carnivore's Cookout. And so, you know, we had basically Chris Cosentino was cooking for all the cowboys, and we had a big roundup, and the whole deal, it was pretty authentic, but... So that's he's the chef there. And one thing that Chris does, he went and helped us on the processing floor the next day after this photo shoot. And he actually really wanted to kill an animal and to kind of have that feeling of, I serve so much product in my restaurant. I want to have this experience. I want to know. And so we actually saved that hide, and we gave that hide to him. So he's kind of got a memento of his experience in our processing facility. But it was really good for him to kind of, see that experience. But he takes that experience down to San Francisco. And, and he serves a lot of off-all products, a lot of, good, great stuff. But in addition to that, he'll sell offcuts that you wouldn't see other places. So he's very unique
very
with his
creative,
very
huh?
creative
yeah.
and very good food.
Mark?
Yeah, given that you could probably sell almost all your product at the Ferry Building, given the demand for, organic, very high-quality beef, we're really lucky that you can get it out at Kent's Meats and not only get it, but buy it at very, very reasonable prices. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that's possible?
Absolutely. One thing when we think about sustainability in agriculture, you look at where your food goes. Is it sustainable in my eyes to raise this product that is so expensive that only doctors and lawyers can afford it? Is that a sustainable food production system? In my eyes, it's not. We do sell at the Ferry Building with higher prices there, and we do hit the higher clientele, but in addition to that, we do sell product locally here in Shasta and Siskiyou counties, and we have that attractively priced. We actually don't, those animals that we sell here, they're not organically certified. We kind of have to strip some of the cost off each animal. It's essentially the same thing. And it's actually, I eat all the natural stuff. I don't eat or the certified organic because there's essentially, I see how it's produced. There's really no difference. It's just not expensively certified. We try to get that cost down as much as possible so we can sell a good, wholesome product here for residents of Shasta County. And you don't need to be rich to eat good, healthy beef.
Yeah, and I can recommend the roast as well as the seven-bone steak, I think it's called, which is great in the crock pot with a little bit of salsa, 6 hours of cooking, and it's just a terrific food.
Melt in your mouth.
Yeah.
I think, I'm not totally certain about this, but you probably know that the price, is it just the same as the other beef at Kent's? I mean...
Well, right now the beef prices have gone up a little. So, the conventional beef prices, it's a constant roller coaster. And so sometimes it's really high, sometimes it's low. And, there's a lot of reasons behind that. But, and I'm not sure exactly at this given point what the conventional prices are. But I know that our price, we pretty much keep it flatlined. We can control our costs for the most part. So we know, what it costs to produce. And so we can kind of have a good steady price to Kent's. But the other product that Kent buys, it's up and down and up and down. And so, I mean, oftentimes we're right at the same as conventional beef prices.
Okay. You know, you've talked a lot here and there, not on the air, but about sustainability and what a sustainable herd is. Like, what is that? I mean, why should we care?
It's a million-dollar question, if you can answer that. It is, in my eyes, it's, you know, I look at what my great-grandpa did, you know, on the ranch I live on. I look at back to what he did and how he raised the animals, and we try to do the same. And to my eyes, that's being sustainable. We're not overgrazing the property. We're actually, you know, grazing to benefit wildlife. We're doing, you know, not grazing riparian corridors. We're doing a lot of different things, integrating wildlife. I mean, you just got society and the animals and incorporate it all together. And so, yeah, it's just trying to do it right and do it to where, you know, my great-grandchildren could potentially be doing the same thing I'm doing out there.
How cool is that? And we met your baby yesterday, so there's a good chance.
Hopefully.
He will be. Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we're taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Oh, welcome back. You're listening to Positively Healthy, and our guest in the studio is James Rickert from Prairie the Ranch. And during the break, boy, we know we need to cover this, and it's interesting. And this is the kill floor.
Yes.
Yes.
The processing facility. AKA slaughterhouse.
Yeah, slaughterhouse.
Well, my family's been around this trade for many, many generations, so it's really nothing new to me. But to a lot of people, they think slaughterhouse, they think blood, guts, disgusting, yuck. You know, our facility up at Prairie the Ranch, we have our own facility, and since we do all these pharmaceutical grade bovine materials, actually our slaughter facility is spotless, and we'll have USDA meat inspectors that work at other plants come to our place and their mouth will drop. And they'll say, this is the most amazing slaughter facility I've ever seen. I mean, it's developed to where you could essentially perform open heart surgery in certain areas of it. I mean, there's clean rooms. It's an elaborate setup. And it was designed by a guy here in Reading named Kevin Butler. His office is out on Airport Road. I'll give Kevin a quick plug on this, but he helped develop the slaughterhouse, and it was built early 90s, and we've only done our animals through it. And so going back to that closed herd concept,
right,
that's another thing. Only Prairie the Ranch animals have entered that facility, and we can make that statement. That's a big statement to make, too.
You mentioned the education level of the people working in the slaughterhouse, and maybe you want to contrast that, or maybe you don't want to contrast that possibly with other facilities.
Yes. When you look at who's working on our kill floor at any given time, oftentimes there's going to be at least either my dad or myself there, maybe both of us. But you look at the educational levels. We've got, you know, people with PhDs or masters or bachelor's degrees. I mean, one of our skinners, Mark Estes, he's got a master's degree, and yet he skins animals for 6 hours straight every Tuesday. But the way we see it is, you know, we could go out, and we pay these people well to do this in addition, and they want to do it. And they take great pride in what they do, we could break an animal down so fast it's unbelievable. I mean, it's like 12 minutes from live animal to sitting in the cold storage already processed and starting the dry aging. So, I mean, it's that quick. Now I'll contrast to your typical Midwestern beef plant. A lot of your workers may not even speak English. And you think of, they may not have, I mean, their immigration status may be in question as well. You know, are they legal or not? Who knows? But, you know, they really get the minimum wage workers, and they work them as hard as they can. And these workers that they get, oftentimes they're from a different country that doesn't quite have the same sanitation that we do. You know, other areas across different borders, they don't look at washing their hands routinely like we do. Food safety just isn't quite caught on in some places. But and so these are the people that are working in these facilities. So it's kind of scary.
Okay, but then what we're learning is that you guys really take an extra effort. So when
Absolutely.
People are looking at food safety, because with all of the recalls, you know, we're really confused right now. It's like, did what I have for lunch yesterday, is it going to get recalled today? I mean, between the eggs and the deli meats and who knows what will be in the news tomorrow, it sounds to me like consumers have to be the ones asking the questions. And so I'm not certain exactly how inspection works, or, you know, do we only follow the rules when the inspector's coming? I mean, I'm a little unclear about how our food safety seems to be faltering. So it's nice to hear that talk about sustainable. We need food safety to be, you know, at the same level every day, every Tuesday when you're doing it.
Yeah,
it can't
exactly.
just waver, you know? So
yeah.
that's very nice to hear, and I think that that's comforting. Mm-hmm. And so go ahead, Mark.
You know, one of Trudy's sponsors is Dan Martin of Lazy 69 Ranch, who produces eggs and beef both. And he always talks about know your farmer, know the source of your food. And it would seem to me that some of the problems we have with food recalls is that the scale of agriculture has gotten so big that, you know, and the transportation of product across states and across the country has gotten so enormous that it's a system that almost begs for these kind of problems
yeah.
that we've been faced with. And people who buy from you, they know, or they would know, thanks to your appearance today or your website, that it comes from here and it's processed thusly, and mm-hmm. and it's just more understandable.
We raise beef the right way. And another thing with our processing facility, whenever somebody new works there, a big thing is my dad will look him in the eye and say, we've got one rule here. We only, you know, basically you cut meat, you treat this food as if you're going to feed this to your family tonight. And that's a really good rule to live by when you work in that facility. So, yeah, if we have a USDA inspector that's looking at something else and all of a sudden the piece of meat you're working on drops to the floor, if the inspector didn't see it, you could easily give it a quick rinse and put it back up there. But that's not what we do. When something happens like that, we say, oh, too bad, toss it out, next. And you just, you know, we're not completely profit driven, although we need to end up in the black, but we're quality driven, and we go the extra mile to make sure that we have the best possible quality you can possibly get from beef. And that includes the dry aging concept, which not many people do anymore. It's very expensive because you have to let the beef sit and hang for so long, but we do that whole carcass, and that's a really big deal and where a lot of our flavor comes from.
You know, it's fun to hear. I mean, the more you hear our local people talk about their trade, whatever it is, the more we get to know them, the more we make that connection. Part of having you on is so that people can hear who you are. You're James Rickert. You're part of the Rickert family. You're part of Prather Ranch. This is a family that's been around here a long time. And now I've even learned that you're in all of our lives a little more than I even knew before. And the more we can all get to know you, your family, and what you do, we make a connection that is, I find that to be profound. Part of this show is that we're trying to draw a connection for people and create kind of this large family of producers, people who are growing food, creating food, and so that we can all kind of support each other in this. So I want to thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and thanks, Mark, for joining in. And this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll catch you next week.